Hi guys, welcome to the first podcast on the Two Redheads. I'm Josh and this is Richie. This is basically just a little podcast where we discuss policy and describe party lines on New Zealand governance.
Brilliant. So on the first podcast we're doing today, we're going to be looking at the Cannabis Legalization and Control Bill. Just kind of going through the general pros and cons, then talking about some specific countries, party lines, economics, social implications, and what could possibly go wrong. So the proposed cannabis question is, there's two options. It's, do you support the proposed cannabis legislation and control bill? And there's two options: yes, I support it, and no, I don't. So hopefully we don't get, you know, too muddled up on a Brexit type issue with that. The key things that are going to come through are a minimum purchasing age of 20, a ban on marketing and advertising cannabis products, a requirement to include harm minimization messages on cannabis products. So, probably you're going to be looking at very similar stuff to what we have with tobacco currently. Confining use to private homes and licensed premises, limiting the sale of recreational cannabis to physical stores, control over the potency of recreational cannabis being sold, state licensing regimes for recreational cannabis, and finally, the setting up of a cannabis regulatory authority to license and authorize suppliers.
So when there is a controlled distribution of cannabis from the government, or is it going to be distributed by private stores, or is it
going to be? So it's distributed by private stores that will be licensed by this cannabis regulatory authority. Well, should we move on to kind of pros and cons of legalizing marijuana?
Okay, for sure. What do you have for us?
We'll start with the benefits. What do we want? What could we see that could come out pretty well of this?
Obviously, I think the first one that you've got to think of is taxes straight away.
Boom. Right off the bat, hey?
Right off the bat.
Yeah.
I mean, we can draw in other countries here, looking at taxes, for instance, in the States. Colorado, the sales tax was $270 million. US dollars in 2018.
In one state alone.
Yeah. But that's a similar, Colorado's similar population to New Zealand, 5.7 million or something. So with a 15% tax, and they made $270 million in taxes. So I think that is straight away, you can think of that as a positive.
Yeah. They've got here an estimate for what it would be in New Zealand is 240 million. So pretty similar to that.
Yeah. So that must be a similar tax rate that they're saying. A disadvantage, obviously, of taxing high. The whole point of legalizing cannabis is really to take it away from the black market. And the problem of taxing so high is that you take away an incentive to buy legal.
Yeah, I was gonna cite that as a big positive that I see is dismantling the power of the black market, taking away from the power of gangs, money that's being circulated there.
Yeah, for instance, in California, when taxes have approached 50% in some provinces, there's still like a huge demand for the black market because it can just be done so much cheaper. Like, it hasn't wiped out the black market at all. So there's definitely a balance between the legalization and making money through taxes, and then also not just taxing too high and just encouraging the black market.
Another thing, you might know more about this than me, but improved quality and safety control. You could be looking at less potent weed coming through if it's coming from the government.
Yeah, and I mean, the fact that when you make it legal, you make it easier to sort of start sort of experimenting, and maybe it's actually easier to heighten the THC content in some. But at the same time, if you start putting regulations on certain things and saying you can't have anything above a certain level of THC, then yeah, it's probably beneficial for that sort of thing for sure.
The only last pro that I've really got is that it frees up police officers in court. Now, there's a big problem in New Zealand that police officers feel that they're stuck dealing with cannabis when it's really small fish offences that are going on.
Yeah, I mean, there were, I think I've got a stat here saying that there were like 12,000 convictions for people under 25 for minor drug offences. Yeah. And that, and imprisonment has cost New Zealand, that was in between 2007 and 2011, sorry. And that has cost New Zealand more than $59 million. And I mean, another thing that comes down in that regard is that in a lot of cases, in a lot of countries, the convictions for minor drug offences disproportionately affect minorities.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
And yeah. So by legalising it, maybe you make the system slightly fairer.
Yeah, and I've got, just to finish that one off, police spending $90 million annually on cannabis-related offences, and the courts themselves, another $109 million being devoted to the judicial system. So it's a lot of money.
Yeah. So on top of tax revenue, you save almost the same amount of money again.
So what do we got for cons? I suppose, would you say the biggest con, and I think this is going to come up in the arguments later on, is that minors using cannabis?
It's a common misconception that youth cannabis use goes up when it's legalized, but actually no research points to that. Actually, youth rates tend to stay very, very similar. I think a lot of researchers say, because when you're youthful, you tend to just take more risks if you want to do something anyway. So if something like marijuana, if it's legal or not, it's not hugely going to stop someone from doing it or not. Usually rates tend to increase for people over 25. I think a study here in legalization states, I think older adults use went from 5.65% to 7.1% when it was made legal.
Yeah, I definitely thought about this before we made this podcast. I was thinking, at the end of the day, if you're 14 or 13 and you want to smoke weed, you're going to be able to smoke weed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. People are going to be able to get it anyway. They usually say it's 1 degree. So I can text someone that can get me weed within 10 minutes.
And it's actually quite an interesting point, because if you think about it, if you remove the black market, it's actually probably harder for younger people to get hold of weed, because suddenly there's regulation and suddenly there's you have to go through a process to be able to get hold of it. Like, you have to go through age verification. Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
there's no reason why it should be easier, really.
Yeah. Okay, so another reason I've got down here is decreased mental health that can come associating with legal, and you were talking about that before.
Mm. So there's not enough research. Long-term studies to show everything. I mean, I think that a lot of research points to that it doesn't negatively affect people with no pre-existing conditions, but it can have an adverse effect with people that have pre-existing mental health issues. I mean, of course, that's a concern.
Have you got anything on drug driving? Because honestly, that's a fallback for a lot of people that argue against it, yeah?
Yes, that is. I have a little bit of info from Colorado. Colorado is the best parallel to New Zealand, similar populations, similar sort of spread between urban and rural. And it's had probably the most time to measure these statistics. They legalized in 2012, which was one of the first places to legalize. I have stats here say that the percentage of arrests for cannabis-only impairment by a Colorado State Patrol has remained at 6-8% since 2014. The share of drivers involved in fatal crashes who tested positive for any cannabinoid has increased from 11-21% over the past 24 years, but the percentage that tested positive above the state-defined level of impairment fell from 11.6-7.5. So more people that in fatal crashes had cannabis in their system, but less had an impairment level in their system. So maybe that points to more people just having done drugs in the last 30 days than actually doing drugs and then driving straight away.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
And you can't draw a huge amount of conclusions yet on the effects of it. And I think that really testing is still, I'm not sure how effective cannabis testing is. You can't just do the breath test.
Yeah, well, the thing is, obviously, what is it? It's your pee sample, and we know that if you smoke a lot, it stays and you can stay in your system for a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, almost a month.
Yeah, almost a month. So, I mean, I've already heard in the thing I've been looking at, Party Lines, they're definitely, the whole saliva testing is really becoming coming to the air. Because, I mean, if you test what you drive on your way to work, you get a breath test for alcohol, and it's going to have to be a similar process, and it's going to have to be that the night before or the morning before, right?
Yeah,
to really be affected by it.
I mean, it's really, yeah, exactly. You, it's going to have to be something you've done recently, and if it stays in your system for so long, like how do you measure it? It's very hard.
So I was going to say, I think that's us for pros and cons. I was going to pass you on to any specific countries you wanted to ring up.
Yeah, so I mean, I've already mentioned quite a few policies coming out of Colorado. I mean, yeah, that is if people want to compare stuff to, like, look at stats and stuff, it's by far the best to look at. Yep. The most study. I mean, I can go, if you just want a list of countries where it is legal, it's simply Canada, Georgia, South Africa, and Uruguay. Those are the only four countries those are the only four countries where it's completely legal, okay? And then in the US itself, there are 10 states and the District of Columbia. And in Australia, there is the capital city territory.
I did not know it was that slim of the amount of countries that legalized.
And I mean, you look at Canada, like these are recent legalizations, very recent. And I mean, there are things to be said, like Canada, the problems that we mentioned about taxes are also very similar. They've had a big problem. They haven't earned as much money as they thought they were going to be because the black market is still ongoing. Yeah, big business has been impacted in that way. And yeah, if you want to have different ideas of how it's taxed, usually countries have a sales tax, as you would expect, and that usually is like 15% or higher. But also cultivators, when they sell to the retailers, they're taxed. For instance, in Colorado, it's 15% for both, so 15% cultivator to retailer and then 15% sales. Any more on crime? Well, I can tell you that crime statistics in Colorado, for instance, that there's a lot of debate on how it has affected crime rates as a whole. Like, because what you were saying was that, oh, it will decrease gang activity and stuff. Very much might be the case. Some studies have shown that violent crime has risen since legalization. Because it attracts maybe a transient population or a tourist population.
Right, okay, people coming through.
Other studies say that overall crime rate is minimally influenced by legalization, with it not having really a positive or a negative effect, which, I mean, to me is that, like, that is still an argument for legalization in a way, because, like, if it has no effect, like, whether it's illegal or legal.
Yeah, we should be looking at going completely the other way and seeing negatives to come out of it before we can write it off completely.
For sure. Yeah, I think that's probably covers what we've find our discussion back and forth in the last couple of sections. And I think that is probably most of what I wanted to say.
Brilliant. So I'll take us into parties then in New Zealand specifically. And what I was thinking we could do is I'll go through each and then we'll discuss each as we go through them.
Sounds good.
I'll just note to everyone that on this, as soon as a piece of policy like this or a bill becomes legislation, it's very common for parties to kind of stand back and take a neutral approach because it's in the public's hands now. So obviously parties don't want to be seen to be too controlling over anything or anything like that. But you've got, anyway, I'm going to go through most liberal to least liberal. So we'll start obviously with the Greens, and you've had Chloe Swarbrick as kind of the spokesperson for marijuana reform, and they're actually one of the only parties with a defined policy. So they have always wanted to introduce a legal age for personal use, use evidence-based policies from overseas to determine the best model for a legal market, and remove penalties for anyone with a terminal or chronic illness to grow and use cannabis. So Chloe has always kind of been on the edge that, as me and Josh were saying, is that most New Zealanders, if they want to smoke, they'll smoke. So you've got 80% of the New Zealand population before they turn 21 have tried cannabis. That's a big stat, and I had to double check that. But 80% of, and it was done in a Christchurch longitudinal study, before they become 21, 80% of people have tried cannabis once.
I have another stat here saying that about half of all adult New Zealanders, around 1.4 million people, have used illicit, illegal drugs.
Mm.
Yeah.
So that they would have sourced this from the underground black market. They will know pretty much nothing about its potency, and they won't know how it affects them. So these people are likely to become dependent if they don't reach out, especially in areas of society where we're talking about marginalized individuals where they don't trust officials, they're not going to reach out. And really, it's money going towards gangs that could be going to rehabilitation, is her argument. So her argument is she wants legal regulation to enable intervention in all the chaos. She sees a lot of it as how we operate currently as being pushed into the shadows. So she comes up with this beautiful metaphor I was reading before, that currently cannabis reform in New Zealand is kind of like abstinence, in the sense that it's like an abstinence-based view to sexual education. So if you put things in a black box and say you can't have sex, you can't do this, blah, 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 and you don't talk about it, people are going to do it behind the scenes and you're not going to know what's happening. So kids are going to have sex if you, no matter what you do at schools and no matter what you say about abstinence. So her thought process is the opportunity to fix it is through controlling the access to young people, put the money back into education, put the money into intervention and problematic drug use. And the only way that she sees this being able to be fully done is through a legal duty of care in the supply chain.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, definitely taking that money and being able to put it back into like education and social support, it's so important. And currently no money is being put into that.
Yeah.
And it's crazy when you think that this thing is made illegal and we have no money being put into help for anyone for it, really.
We've got our priorities wrong. As you say, it's not a lot of money. So currently, drug law enforcement receives over 3 times the amount of funding that health services do for drug rehabilitation.
Personal possession and use offences comprise 69% of the approximately 25,000 drug offences. And it's like, yeah, as you said, more money is spent on enforcing prohibition than on drug and treatment. There is no funding currently for educating adults on safer drug use.
Which is really wrong, even though it's, and we'll get to this on Paula Bennett, but which is really wrong when we have a serious meth problem in this country.
Yeah. And I mean, does this really help? Ask yourself this. 1,794 school children were suspended for drug use. 15% of all suspensions. And I mean, you've got to ask yourself, do you think suspending children from school for drug use helps them stop taking drugs?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
That's punishment. That's not rehabilitation in any way sense of the word.
Yeah.
Okay, so next up we got David Seymour. Now, he hasn't got too much information, but I had to do some digging, but I got some stuff. So he would legalize cannabis for sure. He said, if I could do it today, I'd do it in a heartbeat. But he doesn't think public opinion is of the support for full-scale repeal on the law, which I thought was quite interesting. I got some quotes of his on the misuse of drugs amendment bill. This was for reforming the medicinal marijuana. He spoke quite well on that. But he said, how effective has it been? Well, the effect of prohibition on dying people from smoking cannabis has been completely ineffective. The intent is to prevent people from smoking cannabis. Well, the effectiveness of it has been almost useless. He goes on to say that anyone can get marijuana if they want to, and a sick person will just go get it illegally. Yeah. He says many people smoke marijuana in spite of the law, and those people create a demand for the black market, which funds criminal elements, creating a product more concentrated than it needs to be. His final quote I've got here is, we have a policy on the statute book of New Zealand that prohibits dying people from smoking cannabis, and in the process is completely sexual in achieving its stated aim, and at the same time forces people to go onto the black market, which they fund, enlarging this criminal sphere.
Interesting that you say that, because I think earlier this month, New Zealand has made it easier to access medicinal cannabis products.
That's correct, yeah.
And also has allowed applications for the cultivation of medicinal cannabis. So maybe that has slightly changed, but I agree with his points completely there. I mean, yeah, it's very similar statements to Chloe in that regard.
He's almost pretty good at having quite a pragmatic argument sometimes, David Seymour. He can be very straight to the point, boom, boom, this isn't working, this is why, and yeah.
Yeah, as for he doesn't believe that there is support for it, well, I guess we'll see in September if that's the case. But yeah, I think that it's so tight. I don't know if you can definitively say if there's support in New Zealand for it or not. Like,
it's hard, man. It's very hard.
Percentage point or two.
I know that the online polls have been picking legalization, but any phone-based poll or anything like that has it completely going the other way. It's hard. I don't even know if our polling is that fantastic here in New Zealand, in the sense that...
I don't think any polling is very fantastic at the moment anymore. I mean, you have, in the last 10 years, you've had a complete move away from any sort of landline for the younger generation, and a complete, like, slow adoption of the internet for the older generation.
And you can't poll with something like that when it's so polarized by age, right?
Exactly. And also, people are so much more passionate about it than others. Like, some people are going to go out and they're going to try all the internet polls and go, yeah, 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 yeah. Some people aren't going to try it at all, you know. So it's going to be very interesting to see which way it goes.
I've got us on Labour now. Very basic. Obviously, because Labour and Andrew Little specifically are the one pushing this through, they haven't had much public eye on it. He supports moves to lift restrictions on medicinal cannabis and has said Labour will be quick to legalise on that. In terms of recreational use, he hasn't advocated for decriminalisation in any sense, but has been obviously working on that legalisation bill. He has consistently questioned the effects on young people, Andrew Little. That's where he's shown concern. And he worries about developing brains. And that's actually all I've got. So those have been his two big concerns, kind of making this piece of legislation.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think it's perfectly legitimate to be concerned about the effects on youth and developing brains. It's because, I mean, there isn't conclusive evidence to say that it doesn't have an effect on, like, mental health or youth, I don't know, suicide or whatever. And it definitely has an effect on developing brains. Like, that is a...
Yeah, and that's the crux. And that is a lot of the time what people having a healthy debate will come back to. And they're talking about private premises, right? You can take your weed back to a private premises. You have to worry about secondhand smoke.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's a problem, like, in places where it's legalized. I mean, I'm going to go to anecdotal evidence here and say that I know that if I'm walking around a state where it's been legalized, if you're in the forest going for a walk, anything, you always smell it, right? Maybe that doesn't factor into the same into, like, the same thing as secondhand smoke.
It's prevalent. It's easy. It's everywhere. People are
So it's a perfectly good concern to have, I think. I mean, also, again, it comes down to those stats we were talking about before. Does it actually increase youth usage? And if it does, and if it actually does decrease youth usage, then it's a better, option, you know?
Yeah, these households, the households that we're worried about, they're going to take weed back to their house, they're going to smoke it, probably smoking it anyway, right?
I mean, at the same time, I feel like a lot of parents, they don't smoke tobacco inside their house. Do they? Like, we don't have concern about babies growing up with secondhand smoke in the house. Made. Yeah. And why should cannabis really be any different?
And I think we've been, and I know we're quite ahead internationally on how we view tobacco usage. And I think, I don't think we're going to see a sudden spike of people smoking in front of their babies or anything like that. There's still going to be the stigma that you take your marijuana and you smoke it out, you know, you smoke it outside or.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, like, it doesn't smell amazing, does it? It's not, like, the greatest smelling thing on earth. Why would you want to stink your house out with it?
Okay, cool. I'll take us on to Winston Peters now, because this actually interests me. This is going to be interesting. So, obviously, if there's anything we know about Winston Peters, it's that he loves a referendum. You know, he's the reason that we're going to see euthanasia coming up in this bill that was supposed to go through in the House, but it didn't.
And I mean, isn't this because of Winston Peters as well, the referendum?
Yeah, I think this came in with his negotiations. He wanted to see a marijuana referendum in 2020.
Yeah, he's got a legalization referendum.
Yeah. So I've got a quote here. Of course, we have our views on it, but we don't think the 120 parliamentarians are more capable of making a decision on this matter than the public and adult voters of this country. So I've got some interesting stuff. I had to do a bit of digging. But when he was asked about the ramifications of marijuana being legalized, right? He didn't actually talk about what would happen if it became legal. He talked about what would happen if we voted against it.
Okay.
And he said he'd like to see more police presence on marijuana if it doesn't become legalized. He said, currently the laws aren't working. We need to ensure more people are obeying the laws. We still need more than 1,800 police that we're getting now to ensure that the law is followed in this country. But then that goes back to our point. I thought that it just seems a bit stupid because currently drug law enforcement receives over 3 times the funding of health services. We don't need to be throwing any more money at drug law enforcement.
I sort of get his argument because at the moment, like, yeah, it's illegal, but we're in such a sort of gray zone where it's like,
right,
oh my God, it's going to be legalized or it's not. We're relaxing. We're not really enforcing it a huge amount. If the people vote no, then it's a sort of a statement that it shouldn't be legal. And then I guess like the thing is, oh, we should probably actually enforce the law. I mean, obviously I don't think that it's the right thing to do. I think that I'm for the legalization, but even if it's a no referendum, I still think things should change to a decriminalization, for instance, or something like that.
That's I'm going to be completely honest. I'd never thought about it in that capacity, but you're right in that sense. But the thing is we know that police officers are exercising a huge amount of discretion on the front lines when it comes to these laws.
Yeah.
And especially when it's young and vulnerable children, especially when it's youth becoming adults, especially when it's vulnerable adults, people like that, they are being pretty lenient on how they enforce these marijuana laws.
And rightly so. I mean, you can't, as we were saying before, you can't just throw and prosecute young people for drug use. We talk about gateway drugs, but like, what about gateway crimes? Like, it's the other way. Like,
yeah. So actually, yeah, interesting point from NZ First. And if there's anything I know about that party, they are very police pro. But yeah, I mean, I've got down here, we still have, and we were talking about it, we still have 4,000 people receiving cannabis convictions that don't necessarily need to, in my opinion. But hey, maybe he's right. If they do vote no, that could be the public signaling that, hey, we're not doing it right. It needs to be enforced.
I think that's quite a few sort of like conservative talking points as well. I know Mike Hosking has a similar opinion. Yeah, I think I can see the logic behind it. I don't think it's right, but I can see the logic behind it.
Okay, finally, we'll move on to National.
No, go on.
National have been pretty consistent in their opinion. They've opposed calls around relaxing recreational drug use for some time. You've got Prime Minister John Key, who rejected the idea of a cannabis referendum straight up, didn't want to see it. Then you had Bill English coming in saying he doesn't want legalization or any kind of trade-based cannabis industry. Simon Bridges has actually been quite hard to find anything on, but he's obviously, you know, any cannabis-related talk is passed on to Paula Bennett as their spokesperson. She thinks the debate itself should be around decriminalization and not legalization. She thinks it should be stopped there, and that's where we should be talking about. She puts big flags on drug impairment. She always brings up drug driving and what it'll mean. She says there's too much unknown, and has actually criticized the clearness of the bill quite a lot. I think that National and also Simon have been quite intent on saying that the detail that the public needs to vote on something like this needs to be more. And I've got a fun quote here for you, Joshy, from Simon Bridges. And he says, if you look at the question of tax, if it is too high, then gangs and black markets continue to flourish. If it is too low, you incentivize cannabis over other legal drugs like alcohol and tobacco. No, you wouldn't want to do that. And then he's connected all of this. He mentioned Brexit and he said he doesn't want it to be a Brexit referendum.
I mean, I'm not sure if it has the same political consequences as a Brexit referendum. I think the two issues are entirely different. But I mean, there are certainly points in there that we have already discussed, especially concerning the taxes and the unknowns. Like, there are a lot of unknowns, and I think there is ways to do it wrong. I think that legalization hasn't necessarily worked the way people have thought it was going to work in places like Canada and like California, even to a degree, like with the amount of that of the black market that is still present. But I mean, I think that, yes, Paula Bennett says decriminalization talking point first, right? Before,
yes,
and not legalization. I think that maybe it should, I think the better way to do it is the other way around. And we talk about legalization, and then if that's rejected, then we talk about decriminalization, for instance. I mean, there seems to be a thing with National for just putting their referendums the wrong way around. You know, like the flag referendum. Why did we not just vote, oh, we don't want to change the flag first, instead of the first referendum? I think I'm fully for a decriminalization talk as well, but I mean, if people vote to legalize it, then it sort of beats the purpose, you know.
So another quote I've got from Paula here is, "We're kidding ourselves if we think our teens are all of a sudden going to stop consuming cannabis because we legalize it. They'll still get it from the black market because they won't be able to get it legally because they'll be underage."
Yeah. I mean,
it goes both ways, this whole...
It's so hard. Like, as we were saying, like, there's the lack of data means that people can just say either side and they're not necessarily wrong. Yeah. And I mean, like, that could happen, or the black market could be wiped out if we do it effectively and they just can't sustain themselves, and then we reduce youth rates. Or, as we've seen before, youth do it regardless, and youth usage rates don't actually change that much with legalization. So it's not really a factor. It's just more about maybe having a better quality product or better social support for when they do use it. It's not necessarily they're going to do it less or more.
So, you know, because she loves to say, "I wish." I've got a couple of quotes here. She says, "I wish we were debating decriminalization and not legalization. I wish that $13 million in the attention marijuana is going to have over the next few months was being spent on meth. I wish, I wish we were talking about meth." Like, it's happening. This referendum is happening, and National kind of need to...
Yeah. And I mean, the thing is, when you start talking about legalization of marijuana, and if you do legalize it and you start putting money into these like drug support programs, you're already starting to deal with the meth problem.
Very good. A lot of that money is gonna, and if you think about it, most of these at-risk people, it's because of meth anyway. And we were talking about how skim the money pooling is there already. If we're getting that money from marijuana, and we will see a little spike straight off the bat of it, a lot of that will be going towards meth.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, meth is very, very easy to get in New Zealand. It's a problem, right? I mean, would these people, like, if you create easier access to other safer drugs, does it reduce? It's a question. I don't know the answer. But I mean, we know that it does decrease the use of opioids. Obviously, it's a different type of drug, but it's a question to ask. Is this statement really true? Like, I don't think the two issues are not linked. Like, they're definitely linked, and building that social support and access to safer products is definitely a factor in meth usage.
And I'll close us off on Paula Bennett with one more talking point. So, connection between cannabis use and poor mental health. She doesn't actually want to see the legal age set at 20. She wants to see it set at 25, considering the human brain is still developing to that age.
It's an argument you hear quite a lot.
What age is it in Colorado?
I think it's think it's still 21.
I think
so. It's definitely 21 in California. I'm not like completely sure on like the science behind brain development, and I don't have the research on me that shows the effects and to what time the brain stops growing. But I think from what I've heard, this is completely like just bouncing through me, and I could just be completely wrong. I think it's 24 that the brain starts growing.
So that's pretty similar to what you're saying here.
Yeah, it's a fair argument. like I don't see that there. I don't see that as a bad argument. Like in the end, it's really quite a logical one when you're talking about trying to protect people. I mean, yeah, youth are going to do it, but you're still like making a statement that we don't think people should do it before this age. When you make a legal age, you're saying this is the advisable age to do it. And if brain growth and development is until the age of 24, then I think that's a perfectly acceptable.
I mean, the big thing I get out of all of what comes through National is that they're criticizing the level of detail, right? They're criticizing uncertainty. They're criticizing the unknown. We don't know what it looks like. We don't know if there were ways to more, you could put in the bill, more information as to what, how the tax rates are going to be set. But I mean, that's all going to fluctuate considering how it takes off, right? You almost have to take that leap and then look at what comes of it, and there'll be more information provided. But you can understand where they're coming from.
Yeah, I can understand. And as we were saying before, the stats, I mean, you can interpret it how you want, really.
Okay, so now we're just going to briefly talk about what the economics of this all could look like. And what we're probably going to see is a lot of jobs take place. We know in America that when they've legalized, you've seen a lot of jobs take off. The US has already recognized approximately 250,000 new jobs from states that have legalized marijuana, and that contributes to the economy and ensures employment rates obviously stay relatively low.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely see a growth of jobs. There are so many different jobs that can, like, you have the retailers, you have your cultivators, you have your like your analysis and your like research. You have even say security, admin, all these jobs that come with it. So there's obviously a job benefit. That being said, like you can overestimate the growth of especially private business, and that's what they did in Canada. They overestimated the growth of the cultivators, and you have these massive like workshops and massive warehouses, and they're empty now, and their stock has halved in the last year, for instance.
I suppose you need to be flexible with it, because at the end of the day, it's still going to come down to market conditions, and I mean the government can't predict that, right?
Yeah, and I think that people, like when you do that, people sometimes overestimate how many more people are suddenly going to start doing marijuana. Like I think everybody thinks that when it's legalized, everybody will start doing marijuana, but that's really not the case. I think cannabis growth, like usage rates in Canada since legalization, have gone from like 14 to 17% or something like that. It's really not a huge amount of difference.
So obviously, I mean, there's that obvious benefit we're talking about, which is taxable revenue. And that kind of round number they're talking about in New Zealand is $240 million. And that's going to trickle down into our health budget, pushing for both prevention and treatment. And I mean, obviously, that's going to save the taxpayer money on certain individuals who might currently not be in the state of play to work or to get out of bed or have health issues already. At the end of the day, if they've got issues with smoking, they're already going to be smoking. And we were also talking about the justice sector, predicted to save around 6 and 13 million if there was a move towards legalization.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I think that 240 million just from like taxes, sales tax, etc. I mean, that doesn't just go to help social support for like weed users. That's a huge amount of money, especially in New Zealand terms. It really is like a large amount of money, and it can really make a difference to a lot of social programs in New Zealand.
I mean, look, at the end of the day, the public's going to smoke no matter what we do. So shouldn't we be kind of reaping any economic benefits out of it that we can be?
Yeah, I think that generally is the
point. That is the conclusion we've come to. What about social? Any social implications? How do we think this is all going to look? Are you and me just going to walk to, wake up in the morning in Wellington, walk to a cafe on a lazy Saturday, have a smoke?
I mean, it is a really good question. I'm not quite sure how, like, say, Green's policies define how that usage is going to...
Well, okay, so what do we know? It's private, homes and licensed premises. And I know they've been talking about the coffee shop where you smoke weed. I know that's been a lot of talk amongst politicians. And it's just, where does that fit in your street, you know? Like, but I suppose that's all up. It's hard to predict.
Yeah, I mean, I can see opposition to it. Just having it in the in the street or in a shop. I think it's hard. I've read some opinion articles for some people to say, oh, to their kids, don't do drugs. And then there is just coffee shops and stuff with selling drugs just on the street. But at the same time, look at something like the Netherlands and Amsterdam. I mean, it's not legal, but you're allowed to distribute it in coffee shops and smoke it in coffee shops. And I mean, they seem to have a reasonably healthy society. There hasn't been an increase in usage really there. A lot of people have never done marijuana in the Netherlands. And it's like, well, and they make a huge amount of money from it. Tourists. And I don't think that if it's well controlled, and better to do it in a cafe than out on the street anyway.
Oh, I totally agree. But yeah, I suppose socially, I mean, it's just hard to predict. It's hard to predict where those shops will be. And as you say, I don't know if you'd want to see them on Lambton Quay, and I don't know if you'd want to see them on Queen Street, right in the thick of the shops.
Imagine one on Cuba Street.
On Cuba Street, yes. Cuba Street's going to be multiple. I thought we'd finish with what we think could go wrong. Because obviously you can see from this podcast that I think when you rationalize this whole argument, it's very easy to see why you do it. But I mean, there is a lot of unknown, and we are stepping into a realm of what we don't know what it is quite going to look like at the other end. Yeah. There is the capacity for that. But what do you think, Josh? What do you think are the main things you could see go wrong towards the end of this?
I think there are two big things for me. One would be the not the tax level, and if we actually do take power away from the black market, we could just end up making it easier to acquire or easier to sell without getting caught. We could still have a grey market that does it underneath the radar. Mm. That would be one. So you'd have to be very careful and adjustable and flexible with how you're taxing it and adjust to what you're observing, I think, is probably one thing I'd say there. My other one would, I think, probably be driving under the influence.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an issue that is very poorly marked out, and it's very poorly statistically backed. But in New Zealand, we do drive a lot, especially in rural areas, and we do have a drunk driving problem in New Zealand.
Yeah.
You can't deny it.
Yeah.
I think it's a risk. It's an at-risk country for that sort of problem to arise. It's not like the Netherlands or something. So I think that it could be a problem, and that there does need to be good testing procedures and good ways to prevent it.
Yeah.
Other problems, I don't think there's a huge problem with the youth harm and youth usage. I think from the evidence I've looked at, I think it could make things better in that respect. Yeah. I think crime is ambivalent. I can't make a conclusion there either. Again, it comes down to taxes probably. And you, Richard?
I mean, any argument you kind of make. So, I mean, I'd worry that people that have addictive tendencies are going to easily have access to it, but I mean they already do, and they're going to end up with harm reduction services, so any argument can kind of be countered by where the money's going. For me, I suppose developing brain, it usually comes back to, is what I'm scared of. We don't know heaps about it between the two of us, but I'd just to make sure that people are responsible with it.
Yeah, and I think, again, when you legalize it, you can start
educating. Exactly. You have the capacity to make people responsible about it.
Way more effectively. You can educate way more effectively, whether that comes to post-usage education, pre-usage education, marketed ads. When you sell it, you can have similar stuff to tobacco, saying about the consequences of packaging and stuff. I mean, it can all... it can all help as well. Like, And as we said, youth usage doesn't necessarily increase. Yeah. So maybe you're only doing a benefit in that regard. Yeah. We don't really know.
I suppose with these things is what are we going to see go wrong? There's already, and as Chloe says, there's already so much going wrong already.
Yeah. A better question would be to say what could go better.
Yeah.
Because there is so much going wrong. We have high usage, which I'm not saying it's a wrong thing, but technically it is right now. We have high...
Yeah. It's 11% of the population smoke cannabis yearly. We haven't given us... But, I mean, they say it's closer to 14% smoke it regularly, you know? And that's a lot of people. That's about... 11% is 527,000 people. So that's 500,000 individuals contributing to gangs and doing that do nothing in the way of helping society.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Richard, for joining with me today for this first podcast. If anyone listened, or for our listeners, thank you for tuning in. It's pretty cool. And if you have any additional points or any comments on something that we maybe got wrong, because I mean we're not perfect. We're just two ordinary guys. Trying to do a little bit of research and come up with the facts, feel free to comment and set us right, and hey, maybe even come on to the next podcast and make a few statements.
Brilliant, love it. Cheers guys, thank you.
Thanks for joining, see you.